You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. In 3 days, one half of these United States of America will be profoundly disappointed and personally despondent. We just don't know yet which half. Half of all advertisement is wasted. You just don't know which half. $1 billion of the $2 billion spent on this presidential election was, if not wasted, at least offered in a losing cause. Again, we today do not know which one. A herd of elephants, a pride of donkeys, a country of these United States, more states and less united these days. You will, faithful listeners to Marsh Chapel on WBUR and otherwise, you will vote. I have no doubt about it. Good. And you have endured the preaching of the gospel this fall from a venerable pulpit and from a fallible preacher. Those especially who responded to the sermons on biblical justice, September 16th, and on generosity, October 14th, both in harmony and dissonance, have, like love, suffered long and been kind. Thank you for your forbearance. Given, though, the division, not to say the war between the states, or better said, within the states, or more precisely put, in the heart of Franklin County, just north of Columbus, Ohio, the home of Ohio Wesleyan University, a small Methodist college for small Methodists and others, incorporated in 1842, we may wonder, come this Sunday, whether the gospel, love God, love neighbor, speaks to our incipient disappointment. By the way, in case you had not heard, the whole election comes down to the vote of a single one person. We'll say, in imagination, a young mother, a 2001 Ohio Wesleyan graduate with two children who themselves one day will go to her alma mater, living, we can imagine, in an antebellum home, a four-bedroom shared driveway house on North Sandusky Street in Delaware, Ohio, across from the old ATO house, who attends Asbury Methodist Church there and is vice president of the Junior League. I believe her name is Mary, or Martha, or both. That's how close it is. Let me suggest that the gospel speaks to us right now in love. That is one thing about love, divine and human. It never ends. Campaigns will cease. Candidates will emerge or retire. Slogans will be put away to be unearthed again. War chests will empty. Celebrations will come and go. Discouragement will be reborn into denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then it may be acceptance. Some who are elected may learn that the position for which they graciously offered themselves is not exactly heaven on earth. Some who are defeated may discover that in losing they were not so much denied as spared. Not so much denied something as spared the actuality of it. We can be proud of those who will offer themselves for leadership and service, knowing the odds against them, especially those who will come up short 49 to 51. We owe them far more than we usually admit. What would love of God and love of neighbor look like Wednesday, November 7th, 2012, the day after a national slugfest, this Wednesday? Well, who knows? But in part, I believe that the Mark and Jesus summary of the Decalogue evokes something particular in us this Sunday. Love, love God, love, love your neighbor, love. Now there is also a neighboring verse that affirms love of enemies, of contestants and opponents, the consequence of love of God and love of neighbor. Those who have listened to Marsh Chapel sermons these years, my own and those of my esteemed predecessors, know full well that this pulpit does not take lightly the consequences of political learning or lack thereof, social virtue or lack thereof, and spiritual piety or lack thereof. I refer you to the sermons just mentioned and preached some weeks ago. Real dire, real dreamlike, real decisive matters are at hand on Tuesday. So go and vote. The freedom of the pulpit encourages you, your own identity and faith exhorts you, and today's gospel leads you. And what a gospel reading. As was beautifully rehearsed from this pulpit last Sunday, Mark is a gospel of conflicts. In particular, Mark is a gospel wherein Jesus argues with vehemence with disciples and with opponents, scribes, Pharisees, and others. Since the River Jordan in Mark 1, Jesus has been at daggers drawn with the scribes in particular. In chapter 1, 22, 2, 6, 3, 22, 7, 1, 11, 18, 11, 27, and we haven't even gotten to the Pharisees yet. And all of a sudden, today, sursum corda, hear the gospel, Jesus meets a peacemaking scribe, an ironic soul, a kind opponent. Matthew and Luke will, 20 years later, erase, as if using an etch-a-sketch, this mark and memory of kindness. Their scribe, Matthew and Luke's, is testing and testy, but not so here in Mark. In the heat of the battle here, there is a quiet, kind conversation. Like those stories of Union and Confederate soldiers across the line of battle, pausing to sing Christmas carols together on Christmas Eve. Or like a Republican governor and a Democratic president finding something shared, something in common, in the teeth of a great wind. Something deeper, deeper than conflict, power, hatred, self is here, in the presence of a scribe, of whom Jesus says of this good scribe, "You are not far from the kingdom of heaven." I don't know about you, but most days, if I could go home with that report card, I would rest my feet and rest my case. This scribe sees with insight and hears with understanding. In love. And the scribe sees this. God is grabbing hold of the world again. In love, and the scribe sees this. God is re-grasping the world and us within it. A little Deuteronomy, and a little Leviticus, and a little love of God, and a little love of neighbor, and the gospel for this day. So hold on to free speech, hold on to your own most identity, hold on to the peace of the faith you hold in your heart like a river, and go and vote your conscience. But after the voting, there remains the living, and by our gospel, the loving in the living. What can this truly mean for us come Wednesday? How shall we love God? By loving our neighbor. How shall we love our neighbor? By loving our opponent. Let me propose an exercise. Its details may lack something, one point or another, from your point of view. Fear not. Add and delete your own spices and ingredients later. Just remember this. Jesus and the good scribe talk. They talk. They listen and speak. The summary of the law they affirm, as we know, was also affirmed by Rabbi Hillel in the same century, and as a way to condense the two tablets of 10, five each, is not unique or even remarkable, though quite portable and useful. What is striking here is the relationship between the good teacher and the good scribe. They relate, they listen, they speak. And in that matter, vein and spirit, come Wednesday, consider an experimental exercise. That is, consider why the other half votes the way they do. So, you are a liberal. Good for you. I commend your liberality. But let me ask you something. Have you given much effort of thought to why half of the humans in the lower 48 states, plus Alaska and Hawaii, disagree with you enough to vote for the other guy? For you liberals, let me suggest three L's to consider come Wednesday. I mean, if we are to love God, love our neighbor, and love our contestant, then we might want to consider why the other side votes the way it does. Love is like that. Love is for the wise. Life. Those more to the right of you in the choir loft tend to have a strong and particular view of the sanctity of life. Have you, Mrs. Liberal, really heard, really deeply heard this conviction? Now, we know there are manifold ways to be pro-life, as a columnist wrote well the other day. But I wonder if, at some gut level, you have yet to appreciate, to approximate, what those to your right in the pew of life think and say and believe here. It will help us all down the road if you can at least acknowledge in detail that with which you do not agree in full. Liberty. Those more to the right tend to have a fierce and protective sense of freedom, of liberty. Oh, I know that liberals love liberty and life too, but my relative asked me once why I thought conservatives did not want taxes taking their money, and I replied, because they believe it is their money. Individual responsibility matters. Personal holiness matters. Have you, Mr. Progressive, truly heard this? What you do, justly or not, deserves just response and reward. And we think of 2 Thessalonians, and we think of Galatians 5, and we think of Nathan Hale. It will help us all down the road if we can at least respectfully and sincerely say that liberty is precious. Limit. Those more to the right of you in the balcony are suspicious of large bureaucracies and big government. They see waste where there should be frugality. They see ineffectiveness where there should be fruitfulness. They see laziness supported here, free ice cream given here, lack of rigor, discipline, and effort rewarded here. Who governs least, he governs best, they think. Most of all, they see debt endless and dangerous. They prefer to support private nonprofit groups like the Salvation Army or churches or private missions. They have not usually resorted to quoting John Wesley, get all, save all, give all you can, though they might have done so. Have you, Monsieur Dreyfusard, adequately, honestly sized up the need for limits? Love your contestant by knowing her view and affirming the parts of it that you can. Or, you are a conservative. Good for you. I commend your conservation. But let me ask you something. Have you given much effort of thought to why half of the humans in the lower 48 states, plus Alaska and Hawaii, are voting for the other guy? For you conservatives, let me suggest three C's to consider. If we are to love our contestant, we might want at least to practice saying out loud why they vote the way they do. Love is for the wise. Choice. When the chips are down and hard decisions need to be made, where is the liberty to be placed? Where is the confidence to be invested? Those to your immediate left in the choir loft privilege liberty in the sense of personal choice. The same affirmations under liberty made a moment ago might simply be inserted here. We recognize varieties of pro-choice positions. We know not everyone buys every party line, but Mr. Conservative, have you truly, deeply considered what it would mean, and I'm speaking right now mostly to the men, to have your own health choices of the most personal and most powerful kinds made by others? Just how long, Mr., would you really put up with that? At least, can you see why, from another perspective, choice is a deal maker or breaker? Community. Those to your left in the pew tend to have a high view of what the common good should be. Maybe way down left, they are reciting lines from Martin Luther King about the beloved community. They believe in building community, doing things together, sharing time, space, and energy and resources. Or maybe they just have a memory of when their own family needed housing, needed food, needed health care, needed employment, or suffered through a hurricane, and they think that the whole is more than the sum of the parts. They underscore that one's own health finally requires a healthy population, that one's own love of country requires a love of all the people, that one's own security and freedom finally require a modicum of the same provided for the whole. These lefties may have had a searing experience, up close and personal, with pain, poverty, or peril. Let those who have much not have too much, and those who have little not have too little, they whisper. Liberty, yes, but justice too, for all in these United States. Compassion. Those to your left in the balcony emphasize compassion. Their sense of pride, sloth, and falsehood is heightened. There but for the grace of God go I, they think. Their sense of hypocrisy, idolatry, and superstition is heightened. They carry an acute memory of where and when things have gone badly wrong, and children have suffered. Children in poverty, children without primary health care, children who thus suffer other maladies, children in distress. Those just to your left, they are willing to forego a bit of frugality for the expansion of compassion. It matters deeply to them this fall whether or not another 40 million people, many of them children, will have access to health care after Tuesday. Yes, it must be admitted, they would rather spare the rod a bit and spoil the child a bit if that means all children are fed, clothed, housed, taught, and healed. Love your contestant by knowing his view and affirming those parts you can. Now, let me close by moving from preaching to meddling. Maybe you thought I'd been meddling already. I've been preaching since 1976. In May 1976, I departed from North Sandusky Street, Franklin County, Ohio Wesleyan, Ohio, the heart of the country, and a year living across the street in the imagination in the old ATO house from that one person with the divided driveway and the four-room antebellum home, Mary Martha or Martha Mary, that one person whose single vote will decide this election. And my impression over these years of preaching is that in practice, we liberals are not always all that liberal, and we conservatives are not always all that conservative. Here is what I mean. So, as a conservative, you believe in limited government and think the private sector, including churches, should care for the poor. Fine. So I must ask you, do you tithe? You know, the average pledge in churches is 1%, not 10%. If we are so keen on limited government, a worthy goal, and think the civil society can carry the work, then why are we so limited in our giving to the churches and other eleemosynary institutions? You see what I mean about meddling. So, as a liberal, you believe in community, in communal benefits, in the common good, the good of all. Fine. Good. Do you build community? Do you take the time to participate in all those fallible, time-consuming groups? Do you worship? Do you take the time and energy to build up the community of faith starting on Sunday morning? Or do you lie in bed, or do you play golf or something else come Sunday? You see what I mean about meddling. Here's what I mean. Let each of us be convinced in his or her own mind, but let's practice what we preach. That is, I'll expect a tithe from all the conservatives and 100% worship attendance from all the liberals, or better yet, both from both. Love God, love neighbor. Devotion and service, love of God and love of neighbor, worship and generosity, friends, these are the things right and left over time that will last. Do these, and you may hear a whisper one evening that sounds like this: you are not far from the kingdom of heaven. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. By the way, my name is Bob Hill, and I approve of this message.